Today is Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. This is a part four Grand Canyon oral history interview with Claire Donato, spelled D-O-N-A-T-O. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Claire. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Great. Claire, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the phone?
You may.
Thank you. End of part three, you told us about, a number of the people that you'd work with and some of the fascinating stuff that you did with the lumber on the Black Bridge and the Kaibab Suspension Bridge, things like that. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your time at Grand Canyon before you end up going to Olympic National Park?
Well, I would like to clear something up, because I think when I was going through some old photos, I think I got my time wrong when I arrived at Grand Canyon. I think I said December of 79, and I would believe it was December of 80.
Okay.
Because my pictures don't start until this, you know, early 81 at YCC camp.
Okay.
So that would make a better timeline for my time in North Carolina, lifeguarding and teaching swimming there.
Okay. So that makes sense. I mean, just if you've got that extra help, thank you for clarifying that.
That's... Yeah, well, I don't like to be wrong, so.
Well, good. I'm glad you're setting a record straight. That's important. Anything else about Grand Canyon before we?
No, I bought a boat while I was there, because.
Did you?
I had been going to Lake Powell quite a bit, and I was trying to establish some credit. And in order for me to do that, I had to get a loan from the bank. And in order for them to give me a loan, they wanted the balance of what I was buying in the bank account. So I had found a boat I liked. And so Mom to the rescue, she put the balance in the bank account, and I was able to pay off the bank. But 'cause she had... When I bought my Volkswagen Bug, she had paid for that, and I paid her back in installments plus interest.
Okay.
Because she was like that, and so, yeah.
Well, so, anyway, at least she was willing to give you a loan.
yeah, she was. Mm. But I couldn't get my pickup truck. I had to buy this Volkswagen Bug.
And the boat was a, I think we talked maybe about this last time, was an aluminum outboard?
Yeah, it was an outboard. It was fiberglass, little tri-hull, open bow. Not very, you know, maybe 15 foot and one big.
With a trailer? Yeah. Trailer to go with it?
Yep, trailer to go with it. Yep. And at this point, I had traded in my, I'd sold my Volkswagen Bug and had bought the pickup. So I was set for... on a boat.
Great. And did you get that thing up to Lake Powell?
I did.
Where'd you go up there?
Yeah. Mainly we went to Lone Rock.
Okay.
My friend Carolyn and I, who I had met in South Carolina lifeguarding, we would swim out to Lone Rock and back, just, you know, for fun.
How far is that?
That's probably a mile.
Wow.
So that's what we like to do. So anyway, I don't remember much about being in the boat. I have a picture of being on the beach at Lone Rock with my truck and boat right there on the beach.
Cool.
And yeah, Bob sitting in the sand. I dated him for a little bit.
Okay. What do you remember about Bob Sutton?
Nice guy. He started the Super Trash Company in Tucson, which I thought was genius, because it was definitely a service that needed to be supplied, but, you know, just a fun guy.
Uh-huh.
And nothing serious going on with.
Where did the super trash, where did they take their trash?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think they had a place, but outside of Tucson, or they took it down. I really don't know. But I think that's where I met Chris, who was on Trail Crew for a while, because I think she worked for him.
Okay.
For a little bit.
What was Chris's last name?
I forget her last name.
Okay.
She's the one that ended up becoming a nurse. And also her sister, who was the one we went to spend Christmas with in San Francisco.
Ah.
But I can't remember. I can't remember her sister's name, and I can't remember her last name.
Okay. So now you've got a boat, and you've got some skills. And what year is, so are we in 1983 now, or 84?
I think 83, and I left in March of 84. I had that pickup with a canopy and the boat and all my worldly possessions at the time, and headed north. And that was kind of an epic trip in and of itself, because it took me quite a while to get up there. I was thinking maybe, you know, 3 or 4 days. I had planned on taking my time.
Okay.
But not this much time. I had been taking these birth control pills that I hadn't taken for a while. I was doing, I ran the gamut of birth control. But anyway, I was back on the pill, and I didn't like some of the side effects. So I quit taking them.
Okay.
And on the drive up, I just started getting really anxious, and when my leg would push in the clutch, it was shaking, and I pulled over, and I'm like, you know, checking my pulse, and it's like over 100 beats a minute, and it scared me.
Yeah.
And I got out, I wrote on a piece of cardboard, you know, help. And a trucker pulled over, and I said, I don't know what's going on, but I'm real shaky, I'm real nervous, and I don't know, I think now it was an anxiety attack, but I didn't know what was happening at the time. And so I was in Idaho somewhere, but along the Snake River, and he took me to the next truck stop and radioed in, and so some paramedics had met me there, and they just, you know, talked to me for a while and took my vitals, and I hung out for a while and calmed down, and they just said, you know, I think that you just had a panic attack. And I said, okay, and so the sheriff took me back to my rig, and luckily everything was still there, because there was, my whole world was sitting on the side of the road there.
Yeah.
And so I just got in and just found a hotel, and I called my dad, and he said that I shouldn't have just stopped cold turkey off the birth control, and that it was for a young person. And I said, well, geez, I'm in my 20s. How young do you have to be?
Right.
So anyway, he was thinking like 19, but so anyway, I recovered of that and back on the road. And I started to overheat. So I pulled over and let things, I had lost my fan belt.
Ooh.
So I had overheated. And I said, okay, well, great. So I hitched to the next truck stop. And there's a whole bunch of truckers there because they were waiting for the weigh station to close before they took off. So I told them what was going on. I picked up a bunch of emergency fan belts you know, that kind of, they're hard to get real tight because you have to hook them together.
Right.
But anyway, one of them took me back, and I limped back into that truck stop. And one of them goes, well, your radiator is busted. So because they're hanging around not having anything else to do, they take my radiator out and said, well, I'm going to, there's an auto parts store. We can go get some solder and we can solder it up for you. And I went, well, great. So I said, let me just run to the bathroom. And while I was in the bathroom, they take off and they get the soldering stuff and come back. And I said, well, did you get a fan belt? Because that's why I wanted to go. Is get a fan belt, which is the cause of my problems to begin with.
Right.
So they said no, they didn't get the fan belt. So they, anyway, I had watched them take it out, and they soldered, and we put it back in. And I bought out all the emergency fan belts that they had there, and I get back on the road. Well, I'd had to stop every so often to replace the emergency fan belts because it kept flying off. I couldn't get it tight enough.
Hmm.
So I, it's like a Friday. I limp into Ontario, Oregon, which is on the border there of Oregon and Idaho. And I found a hotel that had a grocery store across the street. Next door to a bar, and I said, okay, I'm staying here. I called an auto place and said, I need to have my radiator fixed. It's got holes in it, and I need fan belts. And he said, okay, and they picked up and delivered.
Oh, wow.
So I took the radiator out. And the guy showed up and seemed a little astonished that I had done that. I was like, well, I'm getting pretty good at it at this point.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I gave it to him. It was the weekend, so it wasn't coming back till Monday.
Huh.
But like I said, I had the grocery store and the bar and the hotel room, so I was set. Monday brought it back to me, and I got it. I put it back in. My fan belt was all set now, and on the road I got again. So I'm traveling along I-84 now along the Columbia River, and I've got all sorts of white smoke happening.
Ooh.
Behind me. So I pull into a gas station, and I'm talking to him about what could be wrong. He says, well, you probably need a new head gasket after all the other problems you had. And I said, okay, but can I make it to Port Angeles before I change that?
Hmm.
But he said, yeah, I think so. You're just going to be blowing like smoke the whole way. So I said, okay. I'm trying to make it to Port Angeles. So I made it, and so I made it, and I eventually pulled everything out of my truck, and my mudroom was now my auto parts area. But,
and was it the head gasket?
It was actually a cracked head.
Oh.
I ended up having to go down to Olympia to find the head. Yeah, this was an ongoing saga. But that was after, because I can't remember, I must have stayed at Richard's for a little bit because he showed me around, showed where I was going to live.
Okay.
So it wasn't until I moved into my house that I took the truck apart. But
what was the housing like there?
It was pretty nice. So there was three houses behind the Elwall Ranger Station, which was where the mule barn was.
Is that ELWA, Elwha Ranger Station?
ELWHA.
HA, thank you.
So, yeah, I had gone up to the maintenance yard. Richard was going to show me around. I parked up by, I still had the truck blowing like smoke. I parked the truck up by his office and went in, and he was going to show me all around. We went out. The trail crew was actually building the barn, and we went out, and I met some of them. And then he showed me where I was going to be living, and there's three houses behind the ranger station. Al Cunningham was the ranger out there, and he was living in one of them. And then there was a little house on the hill and the one I was going to be in. And luckily, Al Cunningham enjoyed working on vehicles. So that was lucky. And particularly old, he liked the classic old vintage guys. But so Richard, you know, just showed me there was a little resort right on the river that had a little like lunch counter bar and had river trips running out of it, had little cabins. That's not there anymore. And then he showed me the Consumption Junction Tavern, which was probably where he said I'd end up most of my time, off time there. And so he just kind of showed me around locally, and we went back into the maintenance yard. And here comes the chief ranger. I think he was the chief ranger at the time, and I can't remember his name. All I can think of is Woody. And he came up to us and he goes, well, welcome to Olympic National Park. Do you have any car insurance? And I went, yeah. And my truck apparently had popped out of gear and rolled down the hill and hit another parked vehicle. So that was my beginning at Olympic.
Was that so, Woody Smick?
Boy, I don't know. Woody might have been short for his last name.
Right. Okay.
But I really don't remember his name.
Okay.
And I pretty much stayed away from the Rangers as much as possible.
Okay. Oh my gosh!
Quite the beginning, yeah.
Quite the beginning. Gee.
So it's, everybody was new, you know. Wasn't a very big place. Everybody knew that a woman was coming in to be the mule skinner, and then I tore apart my truck. So I don't know what they thought of me at first there.
So this is a good time to kind of just make sure I get this right. As far as you can tell, had there ever been a female able to shoe mules and pack mules working for the Park Service that you were aware of in this period during the 1980s? Going back in time as far as anybody could say.
Right. Well, as far as I know, there wasn't for the Park Service because there was no stock program for like 10 years.
Okay.
Prior, and I knew the guy and the guys that ran the program before I came to know them. And as far as I know, they didn't have any women working with them. I know that, and this was way back, like in the 50s or something, up in the Hove Valley, there was a woman, Minnie Peterson, who packed into the high country, but she did not work for the Park Service.
Right, because I think that Fred Harvey might have had some female guides, you know, dude wranglers. But that's different from like packing and shoeing.
Yeah, so Not as far as I know.
Okay. And that's Olympic was the park that didn't have a large animal program for 10 years prior, mule program.
Yeah.
But Grand Canyon
Because the,
did.
Yeah. And I don't know at Grand Canyon if I was or not, to tell you the truth. So.
Okay. But we know
I
when
know
you
that
were
there was,
there, so that.
Yeah,
that.
There was nobody else. I mean, there were some women that came on after I got there, but I was the only woman on the crew for a while, and I don't know if there was anybody preceding me.
Yeah, okay. Well, at least we know when you were there, and we have a timestamp for that. And so anybody shows up earlier, we can reset, but otherwise you can claim that first in.
Okay.
So who did you work with there? Who was the crew? Richard Hanson, Hanson.
Right. And then there was Blaine Dalton. All these guys are retired now.
Okay.
Carl Pangratz.
How do you spell Carl's last name?
Oh, boy. Pangratz.
Okay.
Larry Lack.
LACK.
Yeah, LACK. He's actually a trails foreman right now.
Okay.
Gosh, my brain's just not working. But it wasn't a Gary Vogt, but it wasn't a big crew at that point. I mean, maybe 6 to 8 people.
Okay.
And Richard was increasing it, you know,
yeah,
as we went. So more and more people came on, and it actually kind of brought up a few people from Grand Canyon for a season or two.
Oh, how do you spell Gary's last name?
Vogt, V-O-G-T.
Thank you.
Yeah, all those guys are gone now.
And how many mules did y'all have at the time?
Well, at that particular point in time, zero.
Ah.
So Richard and I were going down to California where they were having, what was that guy's name? Chamberlain? Anyway, there was a big mule ranch down there in Los Olivos.
Where's that?
Next to Solvang. Down Solvang, south of Sacramento.
Okay.
And they were having a drought, so Richard was going to get 6 mules for the price of 4.
Oh, wow.
So we were going to drive down there and pick out 6 mules.
So did I'm assuming then that the park had trailers
well,
and trucks. How did that
well,
work out?
Not yet. We drove over to Cedro Woolley to North Cascades National Park to borrow a truck and fifth wheel trailer. And I had never driven a fifth wheel. I don't think Richard had either. I had just driven my boat trailer. Any trailer, and we did it at the canyon, I did not drive.
Okay.
But I, you know, a boat trailer or a bumper pull pretty much tracks in the same as your rear wheels of your truck.
Right.
And a fifth wheel cheats the corners somewhat. I found that out the hard way.
Oops.
So, still in the ominous beginnings here.
Oh dear, oh dear.
So we go to Cedro Woolley, which is where the maintenance for North Cascades is, and pick up the truck and trailer. And so I'm driving first and make a left turn out of the parking lot, which is fine, and then I come to the stop sign and I'm going to make a right turn. And there's traffic, you know, two-way traffic. So So I make a right turn, like I'm used to making a right turn, and the trailer cheats and takes the stop sign out at ground level. And so I'm going, oops. So we pulled over. I had to walk back in and tell them what happened. I mean, this is like 5 minutes later. So they called somebody, and I was either a cop or a ranger. I think it was a cop. Came out, and he goes, oh, y'all don't worry about it. You do such good work for the park, and I'll take care of this. So we left. And got on the freeway, and the freeway was easy enough driving. There's no right-hand turns to speak of. But we needed gas. And so we pulled over. It was in the Kelso area of Washington State still. We were still there. And there was a grocery store and McDonald's and gas station. So we were going to pick up something to eat and get gas, and Richard wanted to get a book, so he was going to run over to the shopping complex. And I had gone in and gotten some food from McDonald's, and I was pulling out of the McDonald's parking lot, and I was going to go around and pick him up at in the shopping center. And here again, another little narrow two-way street, and I'm making a right turn, and my learning curve was a little off since I didn't get it on the stop sign. But there were some big rocks that was landscaping the McDonald's area. So I make a right turn, and the trailer cheats, and I center on one of those rocks. So there I am, in the middle of the road.
Oh, no.
High centered on a rock. And so, you know, traffic is having to go around me, and I'm calling a tow truck or a cop. Somebody called them. Anyway, the tow truck came, and was able to pick the trailer up and yard the, winch the rock out from underneath it. When Richard had come back with his book, I'm like sitting there with my, you know, my hands over my face going, oh my goodness. So, Richard pretty much gives him a government credit card and said, thanks a lot, man, charge whatever you need to. And the guy goes, oh, no, the whole thing was just more pleasurable than you can imagine. So I'm not charging you anything. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so a couple of nice people there. And then Richard goes, well, get back in the saddle. You're still driving. And, you know, I'm scared to death now. But now I figured out that to make a right turn, I got to make it wide like I'm making a left turn.
Yeah.
So after that, we didn't have any more problems. And went down there. It was a good thing the trailer was empty on both those occasions.
Yeah.
But, so we went down, we picked out 6 mules and drove back without incident.
How did you, I'm assuming that the mules, they need to get out and walk around a little bit every now and then as you're driving down the road. How do you manage that?
Well, we didn't. We just overnighted them somewhere where we could, because they were all just halter broke. These weren't trained mules.
Okay.
So we made sure that we overnighted in a small place that we could sort of run them back into the trailer, because, you know, we could catch them maybe in a small area. So, no, we didn't let them out until we overnighted.
Okay. And then,
because of that.
Where, it's like, you look for a hotel that accommodates mules? I mean.
Well, we found farms there was, you know, fairgrounds. You can overnight at fairgrounds.
Oh, nice. Okay.
For a nominal fee.
So you just pull into an enclosure and open up the gate and encourage them to come out, and they are.
Yeah, well, we could lead them out. We did have them tied in there.
Okay.
But the way this trailer was set up is we had to back them out. It was.
Oh wow.
It was kind of funky. So. But yeah, but we managed.
Okay.
And everybody made it home safe and sound.
Cool. So now you've got a bunch of mules, and they know what a halter is, and they'll let you put it on, but they're not used to pack saddles and doing anything else. Where do you start with that?
I just started. I mean, we would catch them, and then we had to eventually build a small enclosure to be able to run them in because they were on like 3 acres, and they didn't want to be caught.
Right.
So I remember Richard bringing out the trail crew one morning and trying to make a human fence.
Hmm.
So anyway, we finally built a small enclosure that I could run them in, and then I could corner them and catch them. They just started, you know, throwing some saddle blankets on them and just getting them used to. Stimulus and
right.
Finally getting them saddled, and I had one mule, Katie May. She was my toughest. She was the youngest, but she didn't like being caught. She liked to kick. but you know, she finally came around, and
okay.
One of the best things. Well, we also got a couple of horses that were local, backyard spoiled horses.
Okay.
But they started out being who we were riding. And one of the mules that we got was rideable. So I ended up riding her for many years. But first I started out with one of the horses.
And did you have to shoe...
Yeah.
Did you have to shoe all the mules?
Yes. Luckily, one day when I had pulled all these saddles down from the attic, you know, and I had to clean them up because they'd been sitting up there for 10 years. And I was doing that, and I saw this little guy wandering around out there looking at the mules. And I went out and I said, can I help you? And he goes, yeah. In fact, I had just finished shoeing one of the horses, and that one of these horses had a club foot.
Hmm.
And he seemed worse after I had put the shoe on than he was beforehand. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do about him. But anyway, this guy goes, yeah, well, I heard there was stock up here again, and It had been a while, and he was actually one of the guys that was running the show back when they had it, and his name was Dave Riome.
How do you spell Dave's last name?
I knew you were going to ask that. R-E-A-U-M-E.
R-E-A-U-M-E. Okay.
Best guess. Anyway, he was a horseshoer farrier.
Ah.
In town. And I had I knew his name because they, you know, his reputation had definitely preceded him. And as soon as he said his name, I grabbed him and I took him over to this horse that I had just shod that I didn't think was very good. And he actually, we went in and he took that shoe off and we worked and he told me what he was doing and he put the shoe back on and the horse was walking better.
Wow.
And I went, well, thank you. And he said, when are you doing these mules? And I said, well, I'm going to start tomorrow, but none of them, you know, have been shod before, so I'm a little worried. And he goes, okay, I'll be out tomorrow.
Hmm.
And so he brought his friend, who was a veterinarian, Dr. Bob Mowbray, Mowbray.
Okay.
They were going to help me. So Bob had a sedation concoction so we could sedate the mules.
Ah.
And Dave was going to actually do the shoeing, and I was going to be on the ropes roping their feet up.
Okay.
And we get through those six mules relatively easy.
Cool.
And I will be forever indebted to both of them for that.
So were they working for the Park Service, or were they just, they wanted to see the Park Service program succeed?
Well, Dave used to.
Okay.
He had used to work for the Park Service.
But he quit, and he
Bob
was...
Bob eventually, yeah, I don't know if he quit or what happened there.
Okay.
But
he was still in town. He hadn't gone anywhere.
Yeah, he was doing his horseshoeing business.
Okay. All right.
And Dave's no longer with us, unfortunately, but... And a mule kick took him out, actually.
Oh, wow.
But Bob became our vet for the park mules. So Bob was always in our life.
Okay.
After that. Which was a good thing. He was an excellent vet.
Nice. I'm gonna go back to Dave for a minute. You mean he was killed by being kicked by a mule?
He liked messing with the ranker stock, you know, and even as an older man, and he had gotten a mule, and I had like run into him shortly before that, and he said, "This mule, he's a tough cookie, you know," and I guess apparently he had been working with him, and he turned him loose, and the mule just whirled around and kicked him.
Wow.
In his abdomen area. And Dave, being the tough guy that he always was, didn't go to a doctor. And I guess that night, you know, eventually, I mean, he was bleeding out.
He bled out. Yeah, right.
So they took him, I mean, he ended up going in to the emergency room, and he got operated on. He was operating on, but he died on the operating table.
Oh, gee.
I believe is the story.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was a sad deal.
Yeah, yeah. But Bob was the town vet, and he started working then for the Park Service just as the veterinarian when you needed stuff.
Right.
That's
yeah,
nice.
He was in town. So he had his own practice in town, and then
okay.
he would come out whenever we needed him.
Cool.
And he's retired now. So.
All right. So now
we actually don't have a large animal vet around here.
Hmm.
Well, we might have one in Squim, but yeah, they just want to mess with the small animals.
Yeah, the money's in dogs and cats, I guess, and people's pets. So now you've got six mules, and they've got shoes, and they're starting to get a little comfortable with saddles and packs. When was the first time you took them out?
Well, I tried packing them around just in the barnyard there first. Let's see, there was the Hayes River Bridge was being constructed, and that was 17 miles up the Elwha Trail.
So the Hayes River Bridge, tell me about it. What? How long was it? What kind of project was it? I'm assuming this is out in like the wilderness of Olympic, is that right?
Yeah, it was 17 miles up the trail.
Okay.
Past Elkhorn, which was 12 miles, 12 to 13, which was a really, it had a ranger station. Hayes had a ranger station too, and I can't tell you how long it was, but we used to, I think that was the first bridge. It's since been replaced. I think it was replaced the year I retired.
Okay.
So I started, the Hayes River Bridge was there my first year and then redone on the, my last year. But it was just a ford across the river, or a footlog for the hikers and a ford for the stock, and they built a bridge, and they had to build a trail to tie in. But anyway, so that was a big project, and most, and we packed in, you know, basically all the hardware. We didn't do the lumber. They milled a lot of lumber on site. They dropped some trees and whatever. And then, but we were doing that. So we were, here we worked 8 10-hour days and was off for 6.
Okay.
So within that 8 days, we were going up to Hayes River twice. And, so 17 miles each way, we'd spend the night at Hayes, and then back out. So doing that consistently helped get the mules into the work mindset.
Yeah, I bet.
But I had a wreck every time we went out.
Oh. Well, at least it wasn't a wreck on a trail with a cliff on one side of it.
Oh, well, there was plenty of, there's plenty of areas where you definitely didn't want to go. You were going down.
Oops.
I mean, it was actually harder than Grand Canyon, because for one thing, the trails, I mean, we built the trails at Grand Canyon 4 feet wide.
Right.
Where the stock went. This was just like a footpath.
Oh, wow. So with, you mean through heavy trees?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oops.
So.
Okay, so there's a way to take out a leg if the mule ends up launching sideways and jams your leg into a tree.
Yeah. I mean, we tried to keep the trees back, or the brush back. You know, that was a constant job too. But the mules had to learn to keep the packs off the trees, or they get bounced off.
Ooh. Okay.
So. They learned that pretty quickly, but you know, crossing creeks and, you know, they had to do a lot of learning, which they did, and like I say, twice an 8-day period, you know, you're doing 34 miles each time.
Right, you do that twice, that's 68 miles in 8 days.
So that whipped them into shape pretty good.
Yeah, but it sounds like it could whip you into shape too.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. And that's pretty much why I went running back to Grand Canyon after that season. But we lived through it. I didn't get injured that year.
Okay.
But I had a wreck every time. I learned a lot. You know, I couldn't do things exactly like we did them at Grand Canyon. I had to learn how to make things a little more secure. I had some mules go off the trail, and the load bounced over so that both of the panniers were now on one side.
Oops.
Luckily, they were empty, and they were off the trail, and both of those, of course, they were on the downhill side, and I had to get down there, and there was a guy I was working with. He was a friend of Richard's from Idaho that was working. His name was Che, C-H-E. And I'm not sure if his last name, Richardson, I want to say, but I'm not sure about that.
Hmm.
But, so I was with somebody. But, yeah, it was an event every trip. It was a good thing I was young.
So if you end up with a couple mules down a slope off a trail, how do you clean that wreck up?
Well, you tie up your guys that you do still have. You got to go down the bank.
Right.
Like this particular time, there was two mules off. Untie them, get their loads resituated, and then try and switch back up to the trail.
Okay.
Tie them back into the string, and off you go.
All right.
So.
No, at Grand Canyon, I've heard that the packers have a handgun to put a mule down if there's a need to,
Right.
if the wreck's bad enough. Did you guys have that at Olympic as well?
No, although I carried one anyway,
Okay.
but I just didn't tell anybody.
Uh-huh.
But that was one of the last things I tried to do before I retired was getting the packers, legally able to pack a gun. And I got the paperwork started, and I don't think it ever got completed. I think what happens is they're packing a gun anyway. Because you're just not going to, dispatch one of them with a cut in the throat or something. It's just,
Right.
I mean, it only makes sense. So.
And at the time, firearms in national parks would have been illegal.
All right.
I
Now
don't.
everybody can. Now everybody can pack one in except for the Packers
Right. And it's like,
and the trail crew. But so it's pretty bizarre. That's why I really was working on getting that
Okay.
legalized. And the Rangers told me, you just have to. It shouldn't be a problem. You'd have to do some sort of training, probably once a year, every 2 years or something, just
Yeah.
to. And keep the ammunition separate from the gun.
Right. I mean, these are all tools and how to, the hoops and hurdles you have to go through to make the use of the tools authorized.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think it's happened. I'm not sure about that, but I tried.
Well, thank you for trying.
I never had an animal, on the trail die. So I
Good.
didn't have to have that experience, but
So you survived the 1984 season.
yeah, amazingly.
And you mentioned as well that, let's see, we've been at this for 48 minutes. You've got a river trip in the fall.
Yeah, well, Richard, I told Richard I was headed back to the canyon for the winter.
Okay.
And he was the one who arranged the river trip. He says, there's a trip going down in November. Do
Ah.
you want to get it? And I said, you bet. So
So that was
I went,
a trails trip?
was it a trails trip or it was just a trip? I think Kurt Sauer was on that trip.
Okay.
But I was staying with my friends, Linda Knutson. I was going to stay for the winter because I tried to get back on Grand Canyon. I had such a rough year up here.
Did you tell Richard you were going to do that?
No, probably not.
Okay.
But they wouldn't hire me back anyway, and so by the time March came around, I said, well, it's my job, I'll head back up. So, in the meantime, I had done the river trip, and a friend of mine and I went to Mexico in February. So I had some good times
Okay.
before I headed up. And then, it just got easier and easier as the mules got better and better. And then, once when we started adding a new or a young mule, you know, we had the older ones to integrate them into, so it wasn't such a
nice,
you know, such a hard thing to do six green mules. We could only, you know, we'd have six season mules and throw one green one in
right
at a time.
Right. Let's go back to the fall of 84, the November river trip. What else do you remember about that?
I remember what was going to be my first time going all the way through, because the last trip I had gotten out at Phantom, so I was pretty excited about that.
Was this a do-it-yourself trip, or was this a park service river trip?
It was park service.
Okay.
So we might have done, I don't remember doing much trail work. We might have been, Kim Crumbo was on it.
Okay.
Ruthie. You don't remember her last
Ruthie
name?
Ruthie Stoner?
She was one of the boatmen.
Okay. And was did she end up working at Phantom?
I don't know.
Okay.
So, I was supposed to have a boyfriend. The guy I'd been seeing, he was supposed to get on it too, but he didn't show. So, it was just me.
Okay.
And I don't remember, I really don't remember if it was a trails trip or not. The other thing I remembered was the river was really high.
Right.
And they pointed out, and you could see because it was the previous year where it really flooded and they had the big event at Crystal and had to evacuate people.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the water line from that. And that was still like, I don't know, 20 feet or so up of where we were. I think we were still in the 45,000 CFS.
Right.
So I remember Scout and Crystal. And we pretty much skirted it. You can skirt it to the right there.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, you know, I'm on the water. I'm happy.
Fun.
You know, I get to row in dead places.
And the flat water? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So I enjoyed it. I got to know Kurt a little better. You know, he was, he's law enforcement, and you know how I feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to know him better, so he was more of a person to me.
Nice. I mean, I would assume that during your career, you know, you would meet people in law enforcement that actually were pretty fun.
I got better.
Yeah. Well, after what you'd been through, there's a reason to be a little gun shy, but.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little different, so, yeah, cool. And then Kurt ended up in Olympic as well.
Yeah, and I forget that timeline.
Okay.
But he was also at Stehekin, and I remember Richard and I went to visit them in Stehekin. And Richard's daughter might have been there too, Heather.
Okay.
And I don't know what year that was.
In the 80s? Maybe?
Yeah, it was in the 80s somewhere.
Okay.
But, and yes, he could be beautiful.
And that was, you got there on the boat, took the ferry out there? Is that how that worked?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And he had a really nice house on the lake. The lake was really cold.
Mm.
It was like July 4th. And I remember doing a hike out there. I want to say Horseshoe Basin, but I don't know for sure. He showed us around. It was a beautiful place.
Nice. Well, maybe this is a good time to wrap up this part. And next time, there's a couple rivers that have some funny names I want to know about.
Ha, 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 ha.
and other stories of packing an Olympic.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that, then, let's wrap up part four, oral history interview with Claire Donato. Today's Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. My name is Tom Martin, and Claire, thank you so very much.
Thank you.